we've developed a virtual reality project with the CFS, and what we're doing with this project is trying to develop a better way to communicate with the public about the need for bushfire preparation.
So how important is it that people in bushfire-prone areas have a well-designed bushfire plan?
Look, it's absolutely imperative that people have a bushfire survival plan. And it's not just a plan in their head. We actually want them to have a written plan so they recognise all the different changes that can happen very quickly in a fire situation.
So what sort of changes do happen?
The big one is weather. You know, a wind change can mean, you know, in the case of the Black Saturday fires, for example, it meant hundreds of different houses were impacted than before that wind change came across. A wind change will make a big difference, but other things that might make a difference and that you'll experience in the virtual reality scenario is you can lose power. We're so reliant on our mobile phones, for example, and we might be looking at our phone and looking at the Bureau of Meteorology site or the CFS site and have an idea where the fire is, and then all of a sudden we have no power, no phone reception. And that's really common in a fire situation. I mean, other things that could change is access to mains water supply, for example.
And from what I understand, what you're saying is that people haven't, within experience, haven't really taken these factors into consideration.
No, we've found lots of people don't. We've done research and showed that a lot of people don't have a bushfire survival plan. The other thing that we've found, which is really disturbing, is when we ask people, would you leave early or stay and defend, a really big group, around 50%, are actually saying they'd wait and see. And that's a really dangerous choice because it's reducing your options and wasting valuable time. So we really want people to either decide, I am going to leave early, and know the trigger that is going to get you to leave early. So that trigger shouldn't be that I see flames, or in the case of one of the Sampson Flat respondents we talked to, that they heard the sound of a freight train. That's way too late. If you want to leave early, you need to know the triggers for when to leave early. And if you want to stay and defend, the advantage of the virtual reality is it gives you some rehearsal, some practice in a safe environment of what a fire would really be like, the things you need to move from around your house, the things that will help you to be safer, and how you can actively patrol your house. And when that fire does actually, you know, if you're unlucky enough to have that fire burn over, where would you shelter in your house?
So what sort of things has this virtual reality program got in it then?
Well, you start on a regular summer day where we've had several hot sort of consecutive days, and then it says the winds are starting to change, you're getting a little bit concerned. You go inside and you see what the message from the CFS is. So it does go through the different messaging that you will receive in a real fire incident, and it goes through a scenario where a fire is actually quickly approaching your home. It's great to keep people engaged too. We've got some gamification aspects to it where people have to go outside and patrol, because outdoor patrol is really important as well in a fire situation. So you have to go outside and find things that really should be removed from your house to make it safer. Then you look inside and see what can be removed from your house to make the inside safer. Then you actually look for what equipment you can use in your house to be better prepared for the fire.
If I could just interrupt there, what sort of things should you remove from your house to make it safer if there's an approaching bushfire?
So some of the things, we don't want to give too much away for people listening about the scenario. Some things that are commonly forgotten, your doormat, for example, is very flammable. A broom that's sitting next to your laundry door, that could actually allow a fire to go straight up into the roof because it gives a mechanism for the fire to move really quickly up into another flammable area of your house.
Yeah, these are all right. Yeah. Well, we won't give any more away, but yes, you're right. These are things that you don't think about.
It's a good learning experience as well as rehearsal. What we're trying to do as much as we can is replicate the emotional stress of a fire to get people, in particular those that have decided they do want to stay and defend. Some of those people are really well physically prepared, and there's lots of checklists on what you should have to be physically prepared, but it's really hard to emotionally prepare yourself for a fire. But we're hoping through giving a situation we can actually see, and we have some people that feel very stressed with that. We do have monitors on people's wrists in our experimental stages to make sure we weren't getting people too stressed, but it does stress people out, and it gives you the opportunity to really rethink your priorities and whether staying and defending is really right for you.
So when you're talking about people's emotional preparedness to defend their property, can you just expand on that a bit? Because I understand that people thought they were emotionally prepared and then from the Sampson Flat experience discovered that it was a lot bigger than they had given it credit for.
Absolutely. And it's really hard to replicate that. And, you know, we had to be able to get ethics approval from our university, so we couldn't really make it as scary as a real event is. But, and I think when you know it's a real event rather than a virtual event, it's always going to be a bit scarier. But what we do know from our other research, talking to people that have survived bushfires, is that a lot of them that did stay and defend and were very well prepared and well rehearsed actually realised when it happened that they wished they hadn't made that choice. I think a lot of times with bushfires, we think of it as a single incident and we don't think of the long-term impacts of a bushfire. And they include things like depression, marital breakdown, suicide. They've followed a cohort of children from the Black Saturday fires and they've even found that their NAP plan results, their literacy skills went down after that experience. So, you know, the fire itself is just the tip of the iceberg. So I think sometimes it's really important to think about that when you're making your decisions and think about really if you're emotionally prepared to go through that sort of trauma.
Because obviously we're looking at people who are probably or possibly going to lose their house where the decision is do they stay and defend or do they get out and the impact on either of those decisions.
You know, one of the reasons that some people stay and defend is because you've got a better chance of protecting your property. You know, if it's a small ember that you can extinguish yourself because you're there, you know, your whole house doesn't catch fire. So there's a rationale for those people that want to stay and defend. But I just think it's really important that as well as knowing that that can be a very rational decision, there's that emotional side of it as well, that it can be very traumatic, very harrowing experience for people. So they really need to think about it, know what they should be looking in those fire patterns to see if it really is a day that I'm better off leaving and going to a fire safe area.
What sort of post-traumatic anything do people have for those who did stay and defend? And we are talking about just homeowners here, not trained firefighters. Is there something that then helps people debrief, you know, whether they saved their house or whether it was too big for them to do so?
Certainly the people that we spoke to had had counselling after the event. We certainly were worried when we created the virtual reality scenario. We don't want it to be a catalyst for post-traumatic stress disorder. But those people that did have a traumatic experience after a fire, yes, counselling is the main thing that they have done. And, I mean, we always encourage people to actually go and seek professional help if they are struggling with that and to realise that it's a really normal thing to struggle with. Because one thing we've found with fire, it's quite a gendered issue. And there's a lot of men in particular that feel very obligated to stay and defend their property. And it might not be the right decision for you. The virtual reality gives you an opportunity to actually see how well you can react, how quickly you can go from, it's called the survival arc. People start in a state of denial and then deliberation and then action, and by allowing people to rehearse it, we're trying to get them to that state of decisive action a little quicker.
That's really interesting because, again, we're looking at people that are untrained and are suddenly faced with, you know, facing a bushfire. What sort of input did you use to create this virtual reality program?
We used a lot of information that the CFS already has available. And we just popped a lot of that with some other research findings into the scenarios. So it's a well-researched phenomenon, but people don't find time to go to the website. The CFS website's fantastic. In 5 minutes, they can get you going on your bushfire survival plan. But we're finding people aren't accessing that information. Everyone's too busy. We get to Christmas, we have lots of things, parties to go to. People are too busy to get organised, and we're hoping that using virtual reality just makes it a little bit more engaging and hopefully memorable for people. So we're also testing the learning retention and whether people actually remember things that they learnt in the scenario.
All right, so which areas of Adelaide are you targeting?
This week we will be out at Tea Tree Gully on Thursday at the library there from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock. We'll be at the Evanston Gardens Library up near Gawler from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock on the Friday. We'll be at the Harndorf CFS on Main Street, Harndorf. On Saturday, we'll be at Bel Air. On Sunday, at the Adventure Playground. And then we'll be at the Mylor CFS the following Saturday. And we're also happy for people, if they want a specific time and appointment, they can come into UniSA at Mawson Lakes campus and experience it in our virtual reality studio.
So they just need to book a time with you?
Yes, they can book a time with us.
How do they do that?
If they go to the website, probably the easiest one, projectlive.org.au, projectlive.org.au, or lowercase. If you go into that and click on the Facing Fire, all those dates and the information is available.
Have you had any members of the public go through the virtual reality yet?
Or? We have. And we've analysed the first 150 people, and it has been really interesting and a little bit surprising, some of the results that we've got. And some of the most surprising things with the results is the amount of people that can actually feel the heat and smell the smoke, because it doesn't actually, we're not doing that. We are just giving a visual immersive experience. Certainly there's a lot of noise involved, but I think it is immersive enough that there's that sort of power of suggestion, and it does say, you know, when you walk outside, your eyes are stinging. And there's people that are reporting that they felt really dehydrated, which would happen in a real fire. So I think it is effective, certainly in engaging people and giving them that experience.
Yes, it sounds really immersive that, as you say, the other senses are kicking in anyway.
Yes, which is good. We couldn't afford that part of the technology, but it's working for us anyway, so we're happy with that.
So how are people finding their experiences? What are they reporting back?
Most people are finding it, we don't really want them to enjoy it, obviously, but most people are finding it engaging. A lot of people are going to get other family members and get them to try it as well. A lot of people found things, especially in terms of what area of the house they should shelter in. They didn't realise why you shouldn't do that. So there's a lot of feedback in it as well. If you pick the wrong room, it explains why that's not a good choice and where a better choice might be. Yeah, people are reporting back that they have learned from it, or it was amazing. A lot of people haven't experienced virtual reality before and don't expect it to be quite as lifelike as it really is.
That's really interesting. Are you finding that sense of, you know, like kicking people into a functional survival headspace, it's helping with that?
It is. We probably need to redo it to be a little bit more scary with the physical preparation. I think the gamification, people are finding the things and then they're quite happy with that, because we're testing people before and after. One thing that's been really noticeable is how important actions of neighbours are. So we find before they do it, a lot of people say, I wouldn't care what my neighbours were doing. But when they actually see all their neighbours leaving and the big flow of traffic down their usually quiet street, afterwards they say, yeah, actually, I think I would be influenced by my neighbours, because I wouldn't want to be the only one left in the street.
Yes, I was wondering about that loneliness factor. If everybody else has gone and you are the one family left, that would really sort of put you in a very, very unfamiliar experience.
Exactly. And then, so when they realise they're by themselves and then the power goes out and they lose contact to the outside world as well, I think that's quite disturbing for people.
I think it is, because now in this area of such easy contact, and we have mobile phones, we do expect to be able to contact the outside world. We do expect to be able to access information. And that place of being quite isolated is very, very unfamiliar in a way that it never has been in past generations.
That's right. We've become very, very reliant on our phones. But you saw when we had the blackouts in South Australia how quickly we lost phone reception. And that can happen in a fire as well. And I think people don't realise that. And a lot of people think, well, I don't have my bushfire survival plan, but I can check on the website if it happens. But that might not be an option. And the other thing that's really important for people to realise, even if you say you're going to leave early, that might not be an option. You might go to back out of your driveway and can't get your car out straight away because the roller door doesn't go up. You get your car out and then the trees crash down over the road and you can't actually get out. Then you have to come back inside and know what you would do to survive.
Is an alternate power source a good idea for people in bushfire-prone areas?
Certainly. And, yeah, one of the scenarios where you're looking for things, you'll see the generator is one of the items to find. We hope that it will encourage people to think about the issue of fire preparation. We'd love, it's free, we'd love people to come down and help us to refine it. By the next fire season, we'd actually like to be able to use this data to have an immersive experience that people can just have without the headsets on their own PC and practice in the privacy of their own home. So the more feedback we can get from people, the better that final product will be. So we'd really encourage people to get involved.
And is that also people in non-bushfire prone areas? So you're happy for like data from...
Certainly, yeah. Because even though we say we live in a non-bushfire area, how many of us go camping or holiday in bushfire areas or go visit friends that live in bushfire areas? So when a bushfire occurs, even if we're in a fire-safe area, we could end up needing to know those survival skills.